4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't think I'm gonna say anything derogatory to myself.
I don't. Well, I think I told you I spoke to Billy McKinney already. So I spoke to Billy McKinney already once.
I got your letter that same day.
You did.
Yeah. My mayor, these folks here are not like my church. You in the city center where you can get it the last day in the month. And last time, it was 5 days coming. I'd need the mailman out there to see if they made a mistake, because we have a lot of new carriers around here. Oh, we got it. About 5 days later, it come, and I looked for the stamp on the letter, on the envelope. It was dated like the month went out on the 30th. It was dated on the 29th, stamped on the 29th. Now, it's just laying up there in the post office.
That happens.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you first. I was curious about how well the black neighborhoods were policed before and after integration of the force. In other words, were the black police more effective than the white police in patrolling the black neighborhoods?
Well, I think they were. For the simple reason, the black policemen knew more about what was going on than the white policemen. And even if the white policemen knew what was going on, they didn't do that much about it. And what I mean by that, you know, if they knew somebody was selling a little whiskey or something like that, they just let them get by and get a little piece every week or month or something like that. You know, same way with numbers and things. But see, we knew all the places. Most of the fellas got on the police force, they knew, because we didn't work anything but predominant black neighborhoods here. And we knew just about where everything was going on. And back in those days, 1948, just about every other house, I would say, I might be exaggerating, that was selling little cone liquor shots, you know, about 25 cent shot then, you know, cone liquor. In fact, that was about the only vice we had, was cone liquor and numbers
on this run.
And as far as weapons, you catch a guy occasionally with a switchblade knife. And that was about it.
Did you find the white police were less concerned about black crime than, let's say, didn't care?
Well, I don't think they were much as concerned about it as the black people were. Yeah. And I know they didn't, because things that we were doing, like making arrests in houses where people were violating the law, after selling whiskey, writing numbers and things. And it was something new to the folks when we started locking them up about it, because these type of things had never happened before. So, now, I'm not saying that all white policemen were like that, but I said the majority of them worked in black neighborhoods were like that.
How about police brutality, the white police beating up on blacks?
There was a lot of that going on.
Did that get any less with the black police around? I mean, did the whites watch the white cops watch themselves a little more with the black police around them?
Well, see, we were walking the beats in the black neighborhood. And the only thing the white police were doing was riding in automobiles, you know, cars.
They always rode, never walked?
No, not in no. If they walked, they patrolled maybe downtown or something like that, but they didn't walk no neighborhood section or nothing. In fact, put up boxes on the post on every beat that we were working. Because we had only communication we had with the police department at that time was using telephone, the box, which we had to report once an hour. And if you didn't report within that hour, they would send somebody out,
send a car, beat car or something out, see if they could find it, because they figured something might be wrong with it. They didn't have walkie talkies or anything. And, when we were put on the beat and things, well, the white policeman would handle the call because they had access to radio.
Yeah.
But, like, if a call was come about something happening somewhere, they would get the call. But we would handle things that was going on where we were walking that we could see.
Right. But in terms of the Billy McKinney said something about the white cops driving up in the sidewalk trying to run blacks down and beating
them. Well, I heard some of my fellow officers said those type of things happened, but it never happened with me or my partner wherever I was walking. But I know one thing, they like if we were standing on the corner, for instance, just patrolling like, and we just having to stop down on the corner, and they pull up, traffic light catch them there, and they had to stop. But instead of looking over saying hello or something like that, they, all their attention would be to the left, you know, like we don't want to talk to them, we don't see them.
Yeah.
And they didn't particularly want us. In fact, Chief Jenkins said when we were sworn in, March 8, 1948, down at the police station, he said that the white policeman said that they were making, he and the mayor were making one of the biggest mistakes they'd ever made behind black people.
Jenkins said that?
Yeah, and said what you fellas got to do is go out there and do a good job and show them that you can handle it, you can do it. And Hartsfield was the, William B. Hartsfield was the mayor of town, and he said that which Jackie Robinson had just John the Brooklyn Dodgers for here. That this is another Jackie Robinson case, and they're gonna be a lot of harassment from white people as well as some of your own color, you know, which it was.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you too.
And
did the white cops back you up in an emergency if you were?
Well, yes, they did. If we had reason to call for some help or something like that, but you could tell by the response time that they wasn't in no hurry to get there.
Okay, you know, they slowed down. Huh?
Yeah.
How about, you mentioned, I saw an article in the Constitution a few years ago that you gave an interview for.
That what?
That you spoke to one of the reporters in the Constitution a few years ago. There was an article.
Well, when I retired, there was a whole lot of people came out here and talk with me. You know, I think I got the biggest write-up of all.
Well, I saw it.
Being one of the first blacks and one of the first to retire, you know.
One of the things you said a few years ago was that we'd be trying to cross Decatur Street and the white police would try to run us over. Remember that?
Well, if I said that, I don't remember any trying to run me over, but now Lowndes and Dixon, because Dixon is deceased now, but Lowndes, he's retired and he's still living. They were walking Decatur Street and it was, they said that some officers tried to run them down. Yeah. But not to my knowing, and if I did, I was in error about, or either whoever wrote that up by saying that they tried to run me down.
Yeah. What you heard about them trying to do that to the Lions and the other fellows?
Dixon, yeah. Lions, Lowndes, Claude Dixon.
How about in court? Did the white police back you up in court cases at all?
No, white policemen, for quite a few years, like when we first was sworn in and start policemen after our 8 weeks training. We had to go to school for 8 weeks to take training and then go to the firing range. Well, when the first 8 weeks was up, we got on start policing. We were at the YWCA, which I guess you know that. Warren Parker, they wasn't well achieved. Not chief, the mayor didn't think it was a good idea with the animosity between the white policemen and the black for us to have roll call at the police department. So we, Warren Parker, donated the basement of the YWCA at 22 Butler Street for us to use, which we only used it like we went to work at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, which was a hell of an hour to go to work.
That was the black watch, right? You had
6 p.m., that's what they called it, 6 p.m. watch.
Yeah.
And got off at 2 a.m. in the morning. Well, we would go to the Y before going to work to put on uniforms, so we wasn't allowed to wear our uniforms off duty.
Right.
Then when we got off, we had to go back and change uniforms.
At the Buckle Street Y.
Right. And that went on for like, well, that was changed when Ivan Allen got to be the mayor.
Okay. Why did he change?
Well, I guess he just felt like it was time, you know. In fact, that ain't the only thing he changed. We wasn't allowed to arrest white people.
I know that.
Yeah. If a white person came on our beat and was violating the law, raising hell or drunk or whatever, our instruction was, which we did, we would apprehend him, tell him he's under arrest, and go to the box or telephone, wherever, if he wasn't close to the box or didn't have one box on no beat we worked, don't care how long it was, and tell the operator to send a white car, police car, where we were. We had a white female or white male to be arrested. Well, he would come and write the ticket up. We weren't allowed to write the ticket up. He would write the ticket up on the person for whatever they were being charged with.
When the white cops came with the wagon, how cooperative were they?
No, he would come with a car.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they wasn't all that cooperative, but if we said that this person that did so-and-so, he had no alternative but to write it up. He might not like it, but he wrote it up, you understand? And he didn't go to court. We couldn't write the ticket and make the arrest, but we had to go to court and prosecute.
Okay, in court, when there was something, a situation where the white cops could back you up on a story, did they do that? Because you mentioned something in that same piece a few years ago that you see them giggling when you were trying to get
Well, yeah, court. They do all that when they call case for us, and we'd be trying the case, they'd be back there laughing and going on, you know, because they figured we didn't know how to do these things, didn't know what we were doing. I mean, they wasn't all that nice. They wasn't glad to see us.
Yeah.
But to get to my point, for like I said, 6 or 7 years, which I think is, I might be in error about how many years it was, because I don't really remember, but it was quite some time working at the Y. But finally, the mayor decided, well, not the mayor, but Hartsfield, not Allen, but Hartsfield, decided to move us to the police department, 175 K Street, in the basement down there. So they even built a shower and all that. You know, they had to make arrangements for us, facilities for us.
The whole segregated
Right, for 8 black policemen, see? And, well, naturally, we wouldn't be involved with the white policemen at that particular time because they worked 3 shifts, 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. Now we went on at 6 o'clock. So now the evening watch policeman would have been on 3 hours when we went on.
I said.
So, been on 2 hours.
You had a special watch then?
6 p.m. what? That's what we were called.
6 to 2. So, we wasn't involved with them in any kind of way, you know, as far as having roll call together. But,
How did the black police feel about all the restrictions? Not wearing uniforms home, not arresting whites, not patrolling white neighborhoods.
How did
black police feel about all the restrictions?
Well, they didn't like it. In fact, they, you know, were trying to do something about it. And I guess as a result of them, the black leaders, Warren Cochran and Scott, Nana Wood, and Baldwin, and a lot of others, they were so-called the black leaders at that time. And, you know, whatever was done, it was done with a little pressure put on them. They didn't just volunteer, or even though Allen changed the precinct and changed the arresting the black. I mean, just black people.
You complained to Scott and Borders, and they would put pressure on Allen, I guess.
Well, they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kept up with, they knew about what was going on as much as we did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then time came after, I'd say like, well, when we got our first vehicles, we didn't get but two. And they were vehicles like every year. You get new vehicles, you know. The police department buy new vehicles. Well, what they did was, like, take two of the year going out vehicles and give to us, you know, to ride in. And they had one car called Car 13 in Fort Worth, the whole Fort Worth. You know, Butler, Auburn, and all around in the southeast section. And one car went the west side, car 21.
But did you still patrol on foot, or just in the car?
Well, they didn't have two cars, and they had, at that time when we got cars, I guess we had more police because they added like three, and then two, and you know, on and on like that.
They had someone pulling some cars, so.
Well, we want foot beats for. Well, I said something like 15 or 20 years, like Hunter Street, Auburn Avenue, Decatur Street, McDaniel Street, Fraser Street, Kennedy Street, Forest Avenue, Butler Street.
But some black cops were in these cars, though.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
So they got the old cars.
Well, that happened for maybe like a year or two, you know. Then, after we integrated, we were just, as far as getting things, just like the white cops.
In other words, when you put another station.
So. Yeah, and we started having roll calls, we were having roll calls, white people were having roll calls, but we were having it at different times.
Did you start patrolling white neighborhoods at all?
Well, now, I don't remember how soon, but I'm imagining, and I'm almost sure that when we started arresting white people, that's when we started patrolling white neighborhoods. I'm sure we did. It all coincided together, you know what I mean?
Was there any reaction from the whites when you began arresting whites and patrolling white
people? Believe it or not. Even when we wasn't allowed to arrest white people, and occasionally came, and an occasion would come that you would lock a drunk up. Mostly, it always was just a drunk or something. Round in the black neighborhood, he done got lost or went to the black neighborhood to buy some shots and drank too much. But, like, if you locked up a black man, sometimes you'd have resistance from him, your own color. Whereas, in talking with, a lot of time we just be talking about things that happened. I don't remember any policeman saying that they had, if they had an occasion to make an arrest on a white person, that it was a resentment or it was a resistance. They were, they respected us better than the black folks did.
How did the black community regard the black police? Were they happy?
Well, a lot of them, business people, they didn't want us around, but we had a good sergeant. He was promoted to sergeant to take the black police over because my understanding it wasn't when they asked around about different ones, we couldn't have black police and who wants to be their superior officer, you know, wasn't too many volunteers and all that, so Bevo Brooks, Earl B. Brooks, we call everybody called him Bevo, he volunteered, which he was a nice son. And I think he was part of black policemen. He didn't show any prejudice at all, as far as I was concerned. I don't think nobody else. And I give you some examples of it too. What was your question? I don't forgot my thought.
The original question was what how the black community regarded.
Oh yeah. We went in several places. When I say we, I mean myself, and I guess some of the rest of them did too. And we would get the wood because back in those days, we called the wood was the person give a policeman information. He was a pimp. Now I think they call it informer if they have him, you know. They kind of dressed it up. But, you know, like, we'd be walking the beat and certain guys like to talk to the policeman. And maybe you might do him a little favor, too, you know, if you have a reason to arrest him, it ain't nothing bad. And he'd give you information. Look at here, you know so-and-so run the place up there, run that beer pile up there, so-and-so? Yeah, I know where it is. He say, ain't no black police coming in this place making no arrests and search around and lock up no drunks and things like that, you know. So our instruction was, like, when we got that kind of information from somebody, don't go in there on our own. Give him a call. Tell my Brooks now, the spear officer, Sergeant Brooks. And he'd go in there, I know, on one or two occasions where we had to call him about things like that. And he said, what is this out here? And he walked in. How you doing, Sergeant Brooks? And all that. They glad to see him. You know, think it's a nice, it's a peaceful call, a visit. What is this out here about ain't no black police coming in here and lock up nobody? He said, what are you doing over there? What's that drunk doing over there in here? Get him on, lock him up, get him out of here, things like that, see? So that cleared all that up, that we had much riding as anybody else, white police and anything. And I remember my partner and myself, Robert McKibbins.
Yeah.
He's one of the first. We were walking back down the street. And I think it was on a Friday night or Saturday night. But when we got to our beat, we started at Whitehall Street. We walked down to McDaniel, way down across the railroad tracks to Mayor Street. Well, with some guys there, I don't know, Sheerans or whatever you call them, Azars. And they had several business around Atlanta, beer policy thing. I understand they were supported political wise, you know, to different ones like mayor or whatever running for some office. And we had been going in there, you know, looking around, see if any disorder was going on or drunk or whatever. And we was locking them up because they said it was against the law to be drunk, you know, in a public place. And we would lock them up. Well, now this is a good example of what I was saying a while ago. White police go in there and they would get them some cigarettes or whatever, you know, on the house. And they would pay no attention to the drunks and things around in there. But we were police.
The whites didn't care that much about you.
No.
But the blacks.
So, When we walked in, one guy where we started walking, one of the brothers, three or four brothers of them, met us at the door and said, "What y'all want?" And my brother said, or either I said, "We don't particularly want anything. We come in here to check your place out. Well, there's anything going on wrong in here, we can handle it. And if we don't call you all, don't come in here." So McKibbins, he was kind of fired up. Like he wanted to start raising hell or giving them an argument or probably lock them up. So I said, "Okay, man." I said, "Let's go." So we didn't go in the place. We went to the box, called the operator, telephone operator, help, car, whatever, Sergeant Brooks' car was. Beat us at such a place, so we went about maybe a block or two from where this place was. And when he got there, he said, "What's trouble?" We told him what had happened. He said, "Get in." "We going in," says, "and let me do the talking." "Okay." So we got on there and got out. Went in. He said, "What is this right here about? These black police can't come in here until you call them, and if you don't call them, they can't come in here." They started to say something. He said, "Well, let me tell you one thing." He said, "That city business license you got up there on the wall," said, "that authorized the policeman, white or black, come in here and make arrests, do anything they want to do, as far as upholding the law." And said, "You don't want them in here, so you take that license down and go out of business, and I'll make sure they won't come in here." And he said, "By the way, what is he doing over there in that booth? What is all these drunks doing?" Said, "Let's get them all out of here, lock them up and everything." So as a result of that, we went in there at random when we wanted to. In fact, we kind of laid on them a little bit, see, after that, just to see if they were going to say anything else. But they turned out to be our best friends. We go in, "Hey, come on in, have a Coke or whatever.
But the white
Coke, what kind of cigarettes you smoke or something like that?" And now, like, down there where we were like, I said, good 6 blocks from where our telephone was on the post. And if we made an arrest down there, which we made quite a few down in McDaniel Mayor, or we made one down the street, or up the street, maybe within a block. We walked down there and we had a situation where we just knock on the window, do like that, they go in the back, in their private phone, tell the operator to send a wagon to Mayor and McDaniel.
But the white cops never bothered with that sort of stuff at all. They never came into
place. Well, now, I don't be in the place when the white police come in there.
I mean,
and like I said, if we wagon the beat, we have all that on our feet. But it's obvious to me because I had black people in business tell me that we doing something the white policemen didn't never do.
Yeah.
See what I mean? So I said, well, regardless of whether they did it or not, it's a law.
Sure. Right.
And we are doing what we are supposed to do. We are upholding the law.
Now,
hey, these damn black police, they coming in, they're going to do things no other police did. See what I mean?
Was the general black community, though, pretty favorable to you?
Say that again.
You know, was most of the black community pretty supportive of you?
Well, I'm giving you an example of how it was when we first started. But after that, I mean, white and black, everybody was our friends then. See what I mean?
I mean, the blacks just couldn't feel they'd be beat up by you. I mean, they might be beat up by the white guys.
Well, yeah, I believe they did. They knew, they found out that we could police just like they could.
Yeah,
the white police, we could lock them up.
But you weren't going to beat them.
See, when we attempted to arrest a white, a black guy. We had to put up with, like, what you locking me up for, where you drunk, or you did so-and-so, or you got, ain't damn thing wrong with me. Y'all niggas just locking up folks because you got the power to lock folks up. Y'all have a quota you have to make every week, things like that, you know. And we put them in the wagon and said, well, okay, put them in the car. If we got cars in. Or if you don't have a car, you walk in the beach. What's your name? Or to complete a wagon ticket, which you had to write down, you can write the charge and all that and sign the ticket, which you had to sign the ticket, your name and your partner's name at the bottom. But at the top, it says prisoner's name, address, and age. What's your name? You know every goddamn thing here. You ought to know that too, you know, and things like that. Well, we had some partners that, well, I'd have to tell myself too. Next thing you know, we was all over, you know. And when we got through, now what's your name? My name is so-and-so-and-so-and-so, see? So we had to gain respect, so to speak, out of some of them. Then we had some that was just as nice as they could be. In fact, I locked up people for drunk and fellas for drunk. And maybe a day or two later or something, I'd be walking the beat and they come down and try to, off hook to, I won't shake your hand. I said, what's wrong, man? Say, you did me a favor last night or night before last night. I said, what? You don't remember locking me up? I said, yeah, I remember locking you up. I said, but you did me a favor, because if I stayed out here, I probably got robbed and beat up or killed or something like that. See what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So you had people that resented you and people that thought you were doing a good job.
Yeah.
And I believe we had more people that thought we were doing a good job after we had been there a while, but I think it was more or less the majority of the people that thought we were doing a good job, because when we be walking, like we come on in the afternoon, walking down, where people sitting on the porch, you know, in the summertime. Hey, glad to see y'all. They've been raising hell out here, you know, and all that. But a lot of the policemen, well, a white policeman told me after we got to be where we weren't speaking to them and they were friends with them and all that. We went to Mitchell and Northside, whoever my partner was, and we were off in the beat and they were sitting there in front of a beer bottle and we got to talking. I said, yeah, I said, we were talking to whoever he was a while ago, said, and he asked us, what time is it? We told him it was 5 minutes to, well, at that time we were going to work at four. 5 minutes before, he said, let me go. It's time for them black police to come on. So that goes to show you that we had a little fear. We put a little fear in them, you know. Because, see, the white police, they don't do them but laugh and talk with them and talk a whole lot of junk, and we go there and we were business.
Yeah. Did you feel that the, a black person that did something would rather be arrested by a black cop than a white cop at all?
Well, now, I don't know
in
that.
In terms of how he'd be treated.
I don't know that, but I could imagine that when we first went on, they probably would have been, not that we were brutalizing them that much, but the resentment, like I said, was a certain element of them that just didn't want us to arrest them, see? Yeah.
How about the white cop that did bother you, the white cop that harassed you? Was there any effort made by Jenkins to transfer these people, fire them, reprimand them in some way?
Well, the harassment that was being done, I don't guess he, well, I don't remember any being changed on account of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, they didn't, you could tell that they didn't want to communicate with us, so they didn't want to talk with us, you know. And now I remember, like, there's two detectives. They were noted for being bad detectives. I don't even remember now what division they were in, but must have been homicide or something, or robbery or something like that. But Billy McKinney and myself were working Fraser Street. We were standing there in front of a restaurant. Cozy Soul Beer and this place, and the White's place. And I made this song Friday, Saturday night. They drove up. Stopped.
Come here, man.
Went over to the car. They had some pictures. He showed up. You know these niggas here? I didn't say nothing. McKenna didn't say nothing. We just walked, turned around and walked on off, and they drove on off. That let them know we didn't like the word nigga, see what I mean?
Right.
And his incident happened when they put us in the jail after about maybe 10, 12 years, 15. We started working the flow where all black prison, because at that time everything was integrated. I mean segregated. And the fifth floor was for all black misdemeanors, drunks and whatever, you know. And so there was a fella called up there, called the office downstairs, and they connected him with me upstairs on the fifth floor, the lieutenant on the floor did. And I said, fifth floor, Officer Hook speaking. This is Chief So-and-so out here in College Park. You got a nigga up there named so-and-so-and-so-and-so, and he's wearing a so-and-so-and-so-and-so-and-so. I listened to him. This is good. I said, Chief, is this nigga black or white? He hung up on me. So about 5 minutes later, lieutenant come up there. He said, Hook said, what did you say? He done called him back and told him, I guess. What you said to Chief So-and-so when he called to ask you about if he had the fella up here? I told him what he said. And I said, when he got through, I asked him, was this nigga black or white? And he just laughed, you know. He laughed. He didn't say, well, you told him right or what, but he laughed, you know. It's funny to him. Yeah, so we just, you know, we didn't give in, and we let them know that we didn't like what he said.
Right.
Yeah. And when, after we got called, which, when a policeman give a lookout, how so-and-so put a lookout on a nigga. Well, when he said that, we started mashing the button on our radio, and that would drown him out, you know. He couldn't give his lookout like he should. So finally, because I give Bill McKibben credit for a lot of things, we all got together on the assistance of McKinney, and we went to the chief as a group, and we told him, said, now, you know, it's kind of hard to be riding in a car and the policeman give a lookout on a white male, a white female, and when he give a lookout, if the person is black, he say a nigga with so-and-so-and-so-and-so, and this and that kind of stuff. So that was stopped.
Jenkins,
that was stopped.
Jenkins stopped it?
Well, I don't know whether Jenkins stopped it or the mayor stopped, but I'm almost inclined to believe that Jenkins stopped it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We let them know that we didn't put a lot of like it. It's something else that was McKenna's suggestion, like. Now, when they would have a white female arrested somewhere on the beach, and the car would call and say, so-and-so, send me a wagon for a white female at certain such place. Well, that meant nobody else rode in that wagon but that white female. If he had some prisoners in there, in to the station, he went and unloaded and went there empty. and didn't pick up nobody else. She occupied the whole wagon.
Was that?
The white female. But if he had a black female, he just said, send me a wagon. Put her in there with white drunk, black drunk, everything else. So we went to the chief about that. That was stopped. So we had to work on it.
So Jenkins was sort of agreeable to all this, huh?
Well, like I said, we went to Jenkins about it. Now, whether Jenkins stopped it or he went to the mayor and the mayor gave him okay to stop it or not, I don't know.
Did you also go to Spots and Borders and stuff and those guys, you know?
Well, not really. I
mean, but they must have heard
a lot of time when we would be talking to them, because, you know, it was common thing for them to be. If you walked off an avenue, you'd see them, or see any of them, whether you did or not, you know, and you get talking about police department, and you mention certain things about it. So, we didn't get everything we got just voluntarily. We had to let them know that we wasn't particularly happy with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
How about, I saw that very few blacks were promoted at first, and there weren't really too many hired. By 1959, only 40 black police out of 650.
Well,
what was the problem there?
Well, things, it didn't come easy. Now, I don't know whether you talked to Howard Ball or not, but he was, the first black policeman promoted. The sergeant, but not like the first eight policemen had been hired, like I'd say 5 or 6 years. I don't really remember when Ball came on, but when he came on the post. Now, another thing I heard, Ball worked for some chemical company. Right on Central Avenue, off of the Pitt Street, Central Avenue, and tell me his boss man was, he contributed heavily to the male race and different things like that. So, Ball got on the police force, and which it was very noticeable that, the chief kind of liked him, or either he had been told what to do by the mayor, that he didn't get the beats and things like walking beats and things like we got when they put cars out. Well, I think when he came on, I don't remember now, they had cars or what, but when the sergeant would make his assignment, Ball was always assigned to a car. Very few walking beats, he walked. And then when the promotion, well, there wasn't no promotion came up, it wasn't like it is now. You have to take an exam for promotion from a sergeant on up now. But back then, Chief Jenkins was it. He promoted, he fired, and did everything. So things are different now, because if he didn't like you or didn't like the way you were doing or how you were policing things, next thing you know, you just be gone.
Were you in trouble if you complained about how blacks were treated at all?
Well,
he didn't like that either?
You know, who was treated?
Complaining
we did our complaining to Brooks, and I told you what type of fellow he was.
Yeah.
Well, we got a complaint. I mean, he's right there. He was with us. You know, ain't nothing I can say about him. He showed that he was fucked. But number one, when he agreed to take us over.
Yeah.
It was a lot of nerve for him to do that. You know what I mean? Knowing all the rest of the white police movement was in it. And whenever we had problems, white or black, he was willing 100% if we were right. And most times we were right in whatever we went to him about.
I spoke to Jenkins, and he said that he hired the ate the last lease. Nobody told him to hire any more, and he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
So I don't.
Well, that's all Leo was, I think, was going to hire at that fixed time. And we were flown in down there at State Street at the police department. Chief Jenkins wore us in. It was on Thursday night. I remember it raining cats and dogs. And that's where we were thrown in. We raised our hands, took the oath. And he gave us our gun and our badge. And then for 8 weeks after that, which we started, I think, that next Monday. That was on Thursday night, and we started that following Monday. Going to school 8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Did you find any changes when Mayor Jackson came in, when he appointed the black commissioner of public safety, Reginald Eaves? Did you see any change in the police department when you had a black mayor? Promotion,
well, back in those days, you know, things were integrated, and it was just black and just white then.
Yeah.
As far as any resentment, as far as the white police, I know it wasn't in there with the black police. Well, I wasn't able to tell, you know.
Well, there were still issues of white police brutality. There were still questions of promotions of whites or promotions of blacks. I mean, was it any different?
Well, all this type of thing started after I left, you know.
You left in what, 77?
I left in 77, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it started happening because I read about it and see it in the paper. In fact, every time it looks like they have a promotion test and all that. And like I said, I didn't take no test or nothing for my promotion. Inman promoted me, because, yeah. And, he also promoted Lowndes and McKibben. It just came out in the bulletin that we were promoted to sergeant.
Yeah. No test, no.
No, they didn't have the test at that time.
So, you were on the force a long time before. I mean, Jenkins never promoted you then.
Well, Jenkins didn't promote me. Inman.
Yeah,
Inman.
Why not Jenkins? You were on so long.
I went upstairs to his office and Superintendent Beerman, he was, when you go into the office part there, he was always there, and you had to consult with him about what your business was up there.
Yeah.
So he said, "What you want, Hook?" I said, "I'd like to speak with the chief." And he started to ask me what I want with him, or whatever, you know, he busy or whatever. The chief's door was open, and he heard me, and he opened his door and said, "Come on in, Hook." So I walked in, and he said, "Sit down." I said, "I said, what's on your mind?" I said, "Well, I'm trying to figure how to say what I want to say." I said, "I knew how to say it, you know, but I want to say it in a kind of a nice, like, way, you know." I said, diplomat way. I said, "Chief, you know, I don't understand." I said, "I'm one black policeman, first black policeman to hire. And as far as I know, there's no blemish or nothing on my record. I haven't been reprimanded about anything. Wasn't the one thing they had against me. They said I'd lock up enough for." So I said, "Now he was bold. He came here after I did, and he promoted to sergeant. And I've been here, one of the first policemen, and every time they have a promotion, look like my name don't come up." Well, what they were doing then, they would submit so many names to, I guess, what you would call a form of chiefs, or not chiefs, or lieutenants or captains or whatever, and they would pick the ones out of the names they had for promotion. That's the way you got promoted then. So he cut me off at that point. He said, "You wrong. That's why you wrong. Now, your name has come up 3 or 4 times when that's promotion. Said, but every time they pick somebody else over you. I didn't ask you. You just said something. They pick somebody else over you.
Isn't the black police had a tough time getting promoted to the whites?
Well, it sure did, didn't it?
Yeah. In fact, didn't nothing come easy for a black policeman during those days, you know. No. Unless you were a very likable person or you had some white person speaking to you, like I believe that bald man told me that you know, I contribute kind of heavy to politics, male race and whatnot. You take care of my nigga down here, see what I mean?
In other words, unless it benefited somebody politically, the black police weren't going to get promoted so fast.
Well, it was a long time before that was promoted. And when there was one, he was the one who was promoted.
Yeah. He became a detective too, isn't he?
Yeah, he was one of the first detectives. He was the first detective. He and Lyle. They were thinking burglary.
Did you find the black police resented the fact they weren't being promoted very much?
Well, at that time, you're missing what I'm saying, seemingly. They were being promoted just like they always were.
Yeah.
But it was just one black police being promoted.
Right.
So they couldn't accept one black police being promoted.
I mean, but didn't you resent the fact that no other black police were being promoted?
Well, we all did.
Yeah,
but I thought you said the white police.
No, I know the whites,
all did.
Yeah.
And that's why I went up to his office to ask him, you know, about it. Why they hadn't promoted no more policemen and why I wasn't one of the ones to question.
Well, promoted. And they also didn't hire too many blacks during it.
No, they didn't. For quite some time after they first started hiring police. And I think it was an understanding, well, I know it was an understanding, the first 8 was hired on a trial basis. But, and if they did all right, they would hire both. Now, just how soon after 48 some more was hired, I'd say maybe like, I guess McKinney could have told you that.
Yeah, I think he did.
Like maybe 5 or 6 years after.
Yeah, but you know, but by 1959, this is 11 years later, there was still only 40 black police.
Yeah.
So they weren't.
I lost track. In fact, I didn't keep up with, you know, when I knew anything, another policeman was coming, or
yeah.
2 or 3 more were coming, you know.
But they didn't.
It wasn't no big.
Well,
rush about time. But that's another thing, I guess, the black citizens got on them about too, you know.
Yeah.
They would talk with the mayor, you know, they had meetings with the mayor about those types of things.
I also was wondering about the black police during the civil rights protests in the 50s and 60s. Do you think having black police around when the civil rights protesters were being arrested, do you think that led to less brutality against the black protesters?
Well, they had 3 routes here. And I was in the midst of all of them. And that's all was called the Hounds route. The situation was black police.
Oh, you just used black police for them?
Just black police. Well, all the routes was in the black neighborhood. Well, at that time, I'm sure they had quite a few black people there. They had one in Dixie Hill. And they had one on Capitol Avenue. And one on Boulevard. Now, we were at all hours, you know. And at that time, like Mayor Allen, when they had the one on Capitol Avenue, he had got to be the mayor there. And he came down there and got up on top of the car.
Oh, yeah.
Made a good talk to the people. And that kind of, you know, quieted things out.
So they used black police to calm down the neighborhood, too?
More, we were more or less black there. Yeah. Yeah.
How about for the protesters in front of Rich's or places like that when they were arrested and put in jail?
Well, they had both black and white, I think.
Okay, do you think it helped? Do you think it helped to cut down on the violence or police brutality to have black cops at the scene and in the jails?
Yeah.
You think there would have been more black civil rights protesters
well,
beat up?
Anywhere they had black policemen arresting black folks, other than having white people arresting black folks, I've seen cut on brutality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like I said, as a last resort, we would go to violence or brutality, so to speak, when maybe if, of course, they didn't hardly do those type of things to white people like they did to us or said those type of things, you know.
I mean, whites, the white police?
The black people, when the white police arrested them, I don't imagine that the white police would drop up a black man and say, "What's your name, boy?" He would say, "I ain't got no gun." You know, things like that. So a lot of it that we were confronted with was something that they brought on themselves. The way they acted when you were up there.
Yeah.
And I used to use this psychology on most of the fellas where I thought I was gonna have trouble. I said, "Look, I'm a policeman and you violate the law. And if you wanna be arrested peacefully, you can be right." I said, "Now, if you want to give me some trouble, most times we worked in pairs when we first went on." So I said, "Now, we going to arrest you. And I want your name, your address, and your age to complete my wagon ticket. Now, you give me those three things, you won't have no trouble out of me. But now, if you want to be the police, then you're going to have some trouble out of me, because they paying me the police, and they ain't paying you too much. And I got the pistol, I got the badge, I got the uniform, I got the gun, I got the dirty stick, and I got everything. And I got you." Yeah. So, another thing that I didn't, every little thing a man would say, like if I asked one, and I put him under arrest, I said, "What's your name?" "I ain't got no name." I said, "Okay." I slept with you. I said, "Now, I want to tell you one thing. A name got to go on this wagon thing." I said, "Now, you don't have no name, so I'm going to put the name down there I want to put down there. When you go in jail and they call or somebody come and get you out and they ask about you or somebody call down there and want to know if they got you in jail, I said, this name I'm going to put on here ain't going to be your name. So when they call for that person, your name, they're going to say, 'No, we don't have him in here.' I said, now that means you're going to be laying in jail without your name with a false name. So now it would say you give me your right name and then you probably could get out by the time you got down there." I use a little psychology on it, you know.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Well, was the black police, was the black community reacting pretty well to using black police during the civil rights struggles?
In civil rights?
Yeah.
During the 60s. Well, what do you mean by it?
I mean, what was the reaction from the black community using the black police during the protest? You know, arresting people and stuff. Were they resentful towards you?
Well, whenever there was a riot or something like that, it wasn't because of the black policemen, so
yeah.
I can't remember now offhand what it was about. In fact, I think on two occasions it was because of something that the white policemen had done.
Yeah. I mean, were they angry?
But they wasn't resentful of us. Back about that time, it wasn't. No. Now, during the time when, well, not during the time, at the time when this afternoon that Martin King got killed, well, you know, they were just riding everywhere, not only in Atlanta, all over the United States, and they had black and white patrolling in. They were setting fires and burning buildings and knocking out windows and things and all that. But they just had all the policemen on that beat, and they had certain policemen that would handle those type of things, you know, the SWAT squad and things like that. But as far as the picketing and all that, I don't think we were in on it. In fact, I know we were, because at that particular time, they only had the 6 p.m. watch. And we wasn't going to work when that was happening in the daytime.
Okay, but during the 60s, it was still going on, the citizens.
But I never was involved in any of that.
You weren't involved in arresting any
of the people? The only time that I was involved when they picketed, what's the heck the name of that? It was right on the corner of the site and Lucky Street, across from the theater there. And all they were doing was just going around, you know, just walking around, and that was the time that black folks were walking around on one side of the street, and the Ku Klux Klan was walking on the other side of the street. That was the only time, and I was driving the wagon that time, and I was just sitting there in my wagon, you know, in case they had an arrest me. Yeah. That's about the only time. That was at night that I was involved in the so-called
But the black police, the black community wasn't angry at black police arresting civil rights protesters.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
Now, how about for the when the force became a little more integrated and black police were sent to other precincts, other station houses?
Well, at that time they didn't have one.
Oh,
they didn't have precincts.
Oh, just one downtown.
I don't know what year they started the precinct, but everybody roll call was at 175 to Cape Street. Yeah.
Okay, that's about what I wanted to know.
But after they got the precinct, because I went Zone 3, which is Grant Park.
Yeah.
I went Zone 5, which is downtown. And I went Zone 4, which is Compton Road, southwest side. I never did wait 1 and 2. And they didn't have a 5 precinct at that time. But since then, they added one down here. Gulch, Major Gulch, in charge of Zone 6, right here on Moore Drive. And there was no resentment, as far as I was concerned, when you were sent to those precepts, you know what I mean?
Okay,
now,
sir.
I might not have been one of the first to integrate one of those precepts, which I'm sure I wasn't. But by the time I got there, there was a black, and everybody was lovey-dovey.
So there wasn't whites, there was enough blacks there? And
right. Yeah, everything was lovey-dovey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then my last 12 years, I was inside. I was in administrative. I was in jail until they said they needed all the policemen in jail, which they had about 100 something on all three shifts. And they turned it over to Hudson, who's in charge of jail now, and the stockade, J.D. Hudson. And I left there and went around Proctor Management. And that's where I retired.
During the promotion controversy of the 1970s, did you find a lot of friction between blacks and whites, black and white police over what were going on promotions? Because that really started in the 70s, in terms of who was getting promoted.
As far as I was concerned, or as far as I know, that wasn't. As I said, all that started like whites getting blacks being promoted and blacks being resentful about whites being promoted was like I'm retired here looking at it on TV or reading about it, even when Eve was fired for saying he gave certain people advance notice about the promotion thing. They were taking an exam. I wasn't even there then. Yeah. But before, as far as when I was there, as far as I know, it wasn't. And then, like I said, about the last 12, 15 years, I was not in the streets, and I didn't have too much contact with the outside police. Yeah. You know, I'd go to work and park across the street down on Buck Street and go in. Now, it was like about on each shift. Well, on my shift, it was Lieutenant Prince, Sergeant Jackson, and myself. And there's about five patrolmen, three. Five policemen, three superior officers, and two patrolmen, you know, just uniform officers. And I think it was about the same amount on all three shifts.
Okay.
So they had civilian records in there, which they have now. And as far as about the resentment of promotions and things, well, if even before I left, if it was, I didn't know because I wasn't out there yet. And certainly I don't be knowing since all this rigmarole about promotions, you know, every time they draw up a promotion test, there's something wrong with it and all that. And the FOP is against it and the Afro Policeman League is against it and all that. Well, I read about this type of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.